Welcome to Your Soul's Revival, illuminating the path of transitions and spiritual growth in midlife. I'm Tina Meadows, your host. With 29 years as an IT executive, 18 years as a shamanic practitioner, and 15 years as a life coach, I've guided countless women through the profound shifts and transitions that midlife brings. This is a time to reconnect with your authentic self, reignite your passions, and embrace the spiritual wisdom that can transform your life from the inside out. Each week, we'll explore topics that support your midlife journey, from navigating emotional and physical changes to discovering the power of your intuition and the mind-body-spirit connection. Together, we'll uncover tools and insights to help you thrive during this sacred season of life. I'm so glad you're here. Welcome to Your Soul's Revival. Welcome back to Your Soul's Revival, illuminating the path of spiritual growth and transition in midlife. Today, we're welcoming to the show Dr. Maddie Alas, Doctor of Naturopathic Medicine, Certified Holistic Healthcare Practitioner, Certified Nutrition Therapy Practitioner, Certified Master Herbalist, and Certified Biofeedback Practitioner. Dr. Maddie helps many people, and among them, she helps midlife women navigate the health impacts we face during this transitional time. Her journey to helping others with their health concerns began with health issues of her own. When prescription medications caused some of her symptoms to worsen, she looked for other solutions, which led her to nutrition and ultimately other natural therapies as well. Maddie meets her patients where they are, looking to understand the whole picture of health to include the root causes of any symptoms and health concerns that arise. From there, she carefully works with patients to create a path to health that works with the person's life, commitment, and goals. I'm so excited for this conversation today. Maddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Maybe you can start off by telling us a little bit about what drove you to the path you're on as a doctor of natural medicine and what the big milestones have been.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, I mean, as you mentioned, I got sick sort of on my own due to my own habits. And the fact is, well, some of them weren't quite my habits, but I was diagnosed with depression when I was 12 years old, which was just family situations, genetics, et cetera. By the time I was 16, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, the autoimmune condition, hypothyroid, against your thyroid. And then by age 21, I was full-blown fibromyalgia. So with that, that was primarily due to working too hard, overworking, et cetera, a lot of stress factors, not a great relationship at the time, et cetera. There's also some family history in there in the fact that my grandmother most likely had fibromyalgia. That was, of course, back in the 50s and 60s. It wasn't deemed that. And then my mom had fibromyalgia around 40. So she was diagnosed officially with fibromyalgia. So with that, in my health journey, much like you said, I was originally prescribed medication. They were like, here you go. Try not to be in chronic pain your entire life, which, of course, is not a fun way to go about life, just taking medication. But with that, I had always been fascinated by nutrition, right? And the fact is, like, what you put in your body has to affect you on a cellular level, on a physical level, on a mental level, on a spiritual level, et cetera, right? Like, food has to affect you. So with that, started Googling, doing some research, and I was like, okay, I'm going to start changing my diet. Ended up going to nutrition school at the Nutrition Institute down in Denver, learning a whole bunch of stuff, tried a whole bunch of diets all the way from like raw vegan to paleo, carnivore. I mean, all those different fad diets out there, but they work, right? And with that, just really trying to understand what my body's needs are and then practicing medicine after that. And the fact is mainly nutrition-based. As I started getting more complicated cases, of course, I started doing more research and, you know, what's thrown your way, you just either sink or swim, right? And the fact is you got to learn more. That's what you do. You just learn more, actually. Anyway, but with all of that, you know, just learn more and more and more, ended up going back to school to get my doctorate in natural medicine. And that led me to where I'm at now. So I think the biggest milestones, besides my own health journey and learning about it, was really cases that came my way, right? And the fact is, you know, you're presented with something and like, I mean, I've always been a sink or a swimmer, right? You either sink or you swim. And the fact is, when something comes your way, you start researching. And I have always wanted to help people and like that deep desire to help whatever came in my door. So I think the biggest monumental changes would just be, oh, this person has X, Y, or Z. What do I need to learn, basically? So right. I don't know if I have any other like monumental elements other than this person comes in the door and what do I need to learn from them? So
nice. Yeah. And I love how your path led you on a path that has allowed you to start helping others, right? And then as you help others, and have been for years now, but as you're doing that, you learn more and, you know, have tons of tools in your tool belt. I know that from my own personal experience. So one of the things that really fascinates me, so I've known you for a long time prior to coming to see you as a patient of yours, and then as a patient of yours, you know, when we were talking, I have this topic, of course, is one where I have my own entry point, being in midlife, having seen you for midlife health issues. And so when we had our prep session and you talked about the common element for all the midlife women that come to see you, it really threw me. I was not expecting it at all. And so I want you to tell our listeners what that common element is, because I was expecting something much different.
Yeah. So one of the most common things I see in women midlife that is less commonly recognized, opposed to some of the other changes going on, is stress. And the fact is, women or men going through midlife whatevers oftentimes are insanely stressed and they don't recognize it within their bodies, period.
Yeah. It's so funny because when you said that to me, I was shocked by it. And then when I reflected on my own circumstance, I realized that that was my circumstance. Even now, I know that stress impacts us so much. And I know that I had to raise my awareness of where stress was in my life so that I could figure out how to nurture myself back from a highly stressed state. But I still wasn't expecting it. So I just think that that's so fascinating. What would you say is the typical way somebody comes to you? Like, as a midlife woman, I felt like I had some very physical things wrong, which certainly there were some physical things going on, but then a lot of the underlying things were stress. And so is that typical?
So people don't come to me for stress typically. Like, they don't come, "Hey, Maddie, I feel like I'm really stressed." That's not a common thing that happens. There are some people, like, I'm not going to deny that there are some people who have that awareness. Most men and or women who come to me within like midlife are having a hormonal aspect for men. It typically is some level of lower testosterone levels. And for women, they're having perimenopausal symptoms. And so with that, whether that be even some beginning hot flashes, changes in cycle, changes in body physiology, metabolic changes, weight gain, et cetera. Like, so those are the people, or those are the reasons why people come, is they're having some hormonal shifts. And then after that, we start doing some digging, whether that be through some testing elements, whether that's blood testing, saliva testing, urine testing, et cetera. And then as we dig deeper, oftentimes we find that, yes, they are having hormonal imbalances, like sex hormone imbalances, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, et cetera, and thyroid changes as well. But the root cause of that, or what's amplifying it, really is this stress factor in life.
Right. Okay. So the stress factor is this underlying factor that really pronounces a lot of these symptoms. And so talk to me a little bit about what that looks like. You did a little bit just now, right? Like, in some of those symptoms, but what are the other, you know, what's like a typical progression of that, or what are the typical types of stress that you find in people?
So some of the symptomatology that can happen with stress, so something that should be iterated as a fact is that you don't have to have all of these things for it to be a stress factor, right? And the fact is, stress comes based on whether it be a genetic factor or what actually the stressors are. They can, you know, the symptoms can be different.
Right.
So as I'm going through these, if you carry a couple of them, but not all of them, you should not just rule out and be like, "Oh, just kidding, I don't have all those symptoms, right? Like, that's not what we need to do. We need to look at, okay, which are the different things that I am experiencing and kind of go from there. So with that, waking up between 2 to 3 a.m., right? That is a really common like stress factor. And what's actually happening physiologically in your body is that catecholamines, aka stress hormones, basically start purging through the liver because your body is processing them. And if there's too many stress hormones, basically your body will then spike because of the fact that it has cortisol present, which will then wake you up. And then you can have mind racing thoughts, you know, et cetera, start to happen at that point. So waking up between 2 to 3 a.m. is a very common, like, you know, and then struggling to go back to sleep on top of that is a really common sign of stress and can happen at any time in your life, but oftentimes will start amplifying during this like middle time of life, right? In addition to that, wired and tired feeling throughout the day, also specifically at night, right? So wired and tired, the fact is I'm always tired, I'm always fatigued. I go try to lay down, whether that be in the middle of the day, whether that be bedtime, whether that be in the middle of the night when you've just woken up and I can't fall asleep. That's that sign of fight or flight type of things happening, cortisol being present, et cetera. But with that, not being able to actually sleep because there's too much cortisol present. So with that, being tired, not being able to sleep. Brain fog, lack of concentration is another really common one, right? We're staring at our computers all day. Nothing's actually like going on, but we're like, oh yeah, I'm working. And then you look and 3 hours have passed and you're like, did I do anything, right? With that really common thing of adrenal fatigue, stress, et cetera. Sugar and or salt cravings, like at any point in the day. Specifically, oftentimes it happens a lot at night when we calm down and such. But with that, I mean, I have people who, you know, will crave salt or sugars all throughout the day. Granted, that could be some other imbalances going on, but it's a very common sign of cortisol and or stress issues. Okay. In addition to that, emotional or moodiness throughout the day, once again, is this something that can happen due to other triggers in our body? For sure. But is it another common thing that happens with stress? Yes. And whether that be even for women, you know, during certain parts of our cycles, specifically after ovulation, we run the risk of having more emotional elements, right? From like a PMDD standpoint. But with that, stress can oftentimes amplify that, right? So it could be hormonally based, but stress always amplifies that. So yeah, so with that, emotionalness, moodiness, et cetera. Hair thinning and or falling out is another really common one that happens specifically perimenopausal that may not happen as profoundly at different times of life, right? So if we're perimenopausal, right, we're going through this transition and we have stress, we'll see a lot more hair loss, hair thinning, hair falling out, like, oh my goodness, I'm going bald, et cetera. Hopefully not, but you know, it happens. So with that, that's definitely happening. Digestive issues, everyone who comes to me with digestive issues, they never are like, I'm stressed, Maddie. Right. Nobody says that, right? They're like, it must be my cortisol levels. But it's a really common thing that happens when we're under stress. Our body will only like take what it needs to when we're stressed. So with that, there can be a lot of excessive food that our body's like, oh, why am I digesting all this extra stuff, right? And so with that, digestive issues can very much, you know, correlate with stress of any sort. Also with that, our cravings sometimes don't help the digestive issues either, but that's another slightly separate issue. Immune system, whether that be changes, issues, getting sick all the time, is a really common thing that happens when we're stressed. When cortisol is present, our white blood cell counts, you know, all our entire immune system will oftentimes, you know, plummet. For certain people, that can happen after a stressful period, right? So like, for example, I remember in college, like I would go through finals and then I would crash and burn afterwards. So, you know, you have a giant work project and all of a sudden, you know, you get sick for a week or something along those lines. So that could happen after the fact of a stressful period. And or that can happen, obviously, on a day-to-day basis. Just I'm catching everything that comes through the office, right?
Yeah.
So immune system challenges for sure. Carrying weight in our face or around our midsection. This can be also hormonally driven as well, right? As changes in our hormones begin to happen. But midsection, it's called a cortisol belly for a reason. And the fact is, when we have higher cortisol levels, our body naturally will start storing weight around our midsection. Heart palpitations, I can't tell you the number of clients, we send them to a cardiologist to get them checked out, and they'll come back and it turns out their heart is completely intact and it's just a stress factor. And so obviously heart palpitations and or higher heart rate, you know, high blood pressure and or low blood pressure for certain people can all be signs of stress, prolonged stress, et cetera. Anxiety, right? And that can correlate with that wired and tired feeling, but just feeling anxious, right? Anxious throughout the day, anxious when you wake up, anxious when you go to sleep, anxious about things that you've never been anxious about before, right? You've been working at the same office, same setting for however many years, and all of a sudden you have to do a presentation and all of a sudden you start getting anxious about it. And you're like, why am I getting anxious all of a sudden, right? That can be a stress factor. And the fact is, the lower our cortisol gets, or in certain cases, as it continues to elevate, it can cause anxiety that hasn't been there before, that doesn't make sense in so many ways. And then excessive sweating. So when people go through a lot of stress, yes, this can be hot flash based, and this is where some of those can overlap, right? But oftentimes cortisol can be the instigator of hot flashes and or excessive sweating. So with that, that's another one. And then the last one, muscle twitching. And the fact is, I'm sure everyone has had that like annoying eye twitch, beep, 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 like at the top of your eyelid or whatever. And you swear everyone and their mother can see it. And like, usually they can. Yeah, exactly. They can, but you're like, oh, look at my eye. It's twitching. Did you see it? Right, Steve? Anyway, so with that, that's another common sign when you're having some cortisol or excessive cortisol. So those are some typical signs that I'll have people start commenting on, or once again, people with excessive cortisol will start presenting with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and a lot of that really resonates with me, right? From my own experience, you know, definitely from talking to others about it. And I think it's really interesting. So I want to talk about the fact that so many women don't recognize that there's stress.
Yeah.
Right. So like, and I want to talk about it in part because that was my experience, right? It was almost as if admitting that I had stress was like bad in some way and made me different, right?
Or weak.
Or weak, right. And I remember the first time that you suggested to me that I had stress. And I was going through so many things. I was a caregiver. At the time, I was intensely fearful about my child's life, right? Like I was intensely fearful. I was still working full time. I was doing all these things, right? Lots of pressure, lots of stress. And when you asked me how I was, I was like, oh, I'm okay, mm-hmm. right? Like I'm fine. And so why do you think that is? Why do you think that we do that?
Well, I think a huge portion of it is we've normalized like life right now, right? And the fact is, Dr. Erin Connolly, she is a great person to follow on Instagram in case anybody's on Instagram. But with that, she talked about how this society is the age of cortisol, right? And the fact is, like, we just live in a cortisol era. We have higher cortisols than we ever have. But with that, we've normalized it, right? And the fact is, we don't look at it as like, oh my goodness, I'm stressed. It's just like, oh yeah, it's life, right? Like, right. I can't tell you the number of people who I talk to them, right? Trying to convince them that they're stressed. And they're like, yeah, but it's just life. What am I supposed to do about it? It's just life. Like, and I'm like, well, recognizing that there are stressors, like just admitting I am stressed, it doesn't make you weak. It just makes it a reality. And then you can start empowering yourself through that, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that's the thing is, as a society, we have normalized what we are going through in this middle-aged element as just life, which it is just life, right?
Right.
That doesn't mean it's not insanely stressful. And that doesn't mean like, you know, so much of that. And even these symptoms, right? Like, I mean, once again, if you happen to talk to randomly a neighbor or something like that, maybe not a neighbor, but a friend, perhaps. You wouldn't talk to your neighbor about some of these things. Oh, my goodness. But with that, like, I mean, people just think it's okay. Like craving sugar at night. I can't tell you the number of people. Oh, yeah. Like I'll eat, you know, chips or soda or whatever, you know, all night long. And it's just normalized, right? Like, right. So I think that's the thing is that we know some of these things are going on as a society, but we've made it okay. Like, oh yeah, that's okay. Oh, it's okay if you've put on a few extra pounds. Like it's just normal.
Right.
And that's one of the issues.
Right. Right. Because if we don't recognize And this is just so that I can say this so that anybody listening who feels like we're shaming about gaining some weight, we're not doing that at all.
No.
I had this experience, right? But if I hadn't realized that the weight gain I was experiencing wasn't normal for me, then I wouldn't have gotten help, and I wouldn't have stopped it at that point. And the problem is that it gets much worse, right? The symptoms, they don't stop or just stay right where they are. They get worse. And so if we don't recognize and gain an awareness about the stress that there is in life, then all of a sudden, we're 10 years down the road where there's something like that's sending us to the ER instead of some discomfort that we can maybe come see you about and get some great counsel and support from you in making it better, right?
100%. And in no way was I mentioning to shame any of that and all your actions.
But
just for clarification. And I mean, that's the other thing is with so much of what's going on, your body is attempting to regulate, right? So for example, salt and sugar cravings, salt helps to fuel the adrenals, right? And so your body is literally craving salt to help to regulate your cortisol and regulate kidneys. Your adrenals sit on top of your kidneys. And so additional salt is an important aspect while, you know, you're going through a stressful period. And then sugar actually, so tryptophan, which is the base of serotonin, right? So tryptophan makes serotonin, is the heaviest and most infrequently found amino acid in all the amino acids, okay? Mm-hmm. So with that, when you have a large amount of carbs, whether that be, you know, the cinnamon roll ice cream or whatever it is, and or potato chips, right? Because that's a large amount of carbs. It basically clears the way of the other amino acids and was like, tryptophan, I choose you, and allows it to cross the blood-brain barrier to create more serotonin. So you're literally increasing your serotonin and dopamine to make your brain feel okay, right?
Right.
So like all of these things are almost self-medicating,
right?
And is in no way shameful. It's just a matter of understanding why your body is doing it, right?
Right, and then why you're getting into the habit,
correct?
Right?
Which because is stress.
Yeah. And so, I mean, as you're talking about all of this and, you know, the symptoms and then, you know, what's happening underneath all of it, you know, I do want to go back to the normalization, right? Like going back to that, because I think that was like that's one of the big things here is like trying to figure out how do we raise the awareness that especially at this point in our lives, this midlife time, there's really a tremendous amount of stressors that happen kind of all at the same time. And that's almost like a perfect storm for all of this to happen from a health perspective. And so as that's happening and yet on the other hand, we're normalizing, you know, oh, but this is just life. Right. I will say from my experience, basically what happened for me was, and it took time, as you know, because it took time for me to come back and really dive in to my health with you. But what ended up happening was I sat with it and slowly started to kind of turn over this thought that these different things were stress, right? And turning over this thought that it's not bad that I'm experiencing stress. The stress is a signal, which is what you were just saying, right? The stress is a signal and it's telling me something. And so once I really kind of thought about that and decided, right, that I was okay with that, because I think that's a big part of it too, is a lot of us aren't okay admitting that we're feeling stressed.
Yeah.
And once I did that, I could start to make smaller changes in my life to support my body better based on the recommendations that you had made to me, right? So that I could really support my body and get it to a different level of health. And so I think, like, what makes that process so hard of, you know, turning over that rock of like, okay, is this stress, and the acceptance, like what makes that so hard for us?
Well, and once again, I think some of that is the normalization of stress in the society. I think some of that is the fact that we can't change a lot of the stressors that are going on. Like, and I do want to go back and talk about some of those different like stress elements in just a second. Yeah. But I think that's a huge thing, is like that it's just life once again, right? Okay. That's going on. And so if you can't change it, it makes it really hard to, you know, want to work on it. Yeah. And I think that's a thing. And then I do think that there's a bigger embodiment of like a weakness within society, right? Right. And the fact is, the way that we view things as a society is, oh, if you can't accomplish the moon and more, like you're weak, or, you know, unable, or like it's kind of weeding out the herd, right? Like, you know, oh, you're going to be eaten by the lion then, you know, because you can't accomplish all the things. And so it's an unfortunate truth that as a society, we kind of have viewed things in that particular aspect. So just to clarify, I think that between the dogma of society, but then also the fact that we can't change some of the stressors we're going through, it makes it really hard for us to recognize it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because I think that was part of why I didn't recognize it. I think when you know, when we met originally and you were saying, Tina, I know you, and I know that this is going on in your life, and I know that this is going on in your life, right? And you listed some things. You might have even asked me, what would you tell a friend? Like, I feel like you even asked me, like, if your friend was experiencing this, what would you think that they had stress, that they were experiencing stress? And I think at that time, like, I really had that thought, but Maddie, like, I can't do anything about those things, no. Right? Like, I can't change them. And so that's where, in talking with you about how to best support my body while I was going through those different things, you know, that's kind of how things came about for me. So it's just really interesting. So definitely go through, tell us about some of these stressors. I'm hoping, just as a little, you know, teaser for everybody listening, I'm hoping that these are very familiar, because I think we might have talked about them in some other podcasts.
Yeah, too. I love it. So yeah, so let's talk about the different stresses that may or may not be going on. So with that, basically one of the elements is just stress from work, right? And the fact is, in this time of people's life, oftentimes they're either in the height of their career and or nearing the height of their career, right? Yes. And so with that, you know, obviously that's going to add additional stress for most people, because they're taking on bigger roles, they're getting promotions, or whatever combination of the above. So height of work stress potentially. And then stress from children, right? With all the change. And the fact is, oftentimes they are becoming adults, which is this whole new avenue for people, right? And the fact is, I used to have whatever element of control, and all of a sudden they're going off to college, they're on their own, that causes anxiety. Plus, like, just watching them become cute little humans, right? On their own and making their own decisions and having that, it's a whole new stress in life. And then oftentimes people will go to college, or maybe they'll get their own, or their children, sorry, should go to college. And or once again, they're off on their own apartment or something like that. So there's usually a new financial stress in that as well. And the fact is, we're supporting our children in a different capacity than we have before. So there's those stresses. And then stress from our parents, right? And the fact is, most people during this time will have parents of an older age that might be going into nursing homes or making transitions from home into, you know, like a smaller apartment or different things like that. Ailing health of whatever sorts. And at some point, our parents do pass away. And I've had a lot of clients who are experiencing the element of becoming a quote unquote orphan for the first time in their life, and just that emotional change, right? And so there's that dynamic. And then, of course, the potential financial stress of parents going into a nursing home, right? Do they have the financial means to pay for that? Are you chipping in to help with that, perhaps? I mean, who knows what all those different elements can be. But with that, stress from parents. And then the other thing is like stress from hormones, or stress from your own physical body and not knowing what some of these things are, right? And the fact that I have a lot of women who are coming to me, and they may or may not have talked to their friends about X, Y, or Z symptoms, but they don't understand, right? I feel like as a society, we may talk about hot flashes. We may see commercials for whatever drug about hot flashes or things like that. But, you know, not really having that knowledge as far as what is physically going on in our body hormonally, things like metabolic changes, as I talked about, potentially mental changes. And the fact is women can just spread or like have depression and or anxiety start to happen, mood changes, sleep changes, skin changes, even some vaginal changes can start happening for women. And that can create a new stress, whether that be due to just the physical changes themselves and or lack of awareness around them or whatever combination of the above. Like, there's just a lot of change happening within our bodies physically that then can cause additional stresses. And then going back to what Dr. Connolly had sort of talked about in her, like, you know, or in several of her posts, is the fact is that in today's society, there is more stress, right? And the fact is, you know, just living life, there's more stress, right? Just what's the demanded of us, you know, all the different things, there's more stress. But then from a physical standpoint, like lack of sun exposure. I mean, how many of us sit in an office all day? We may or may not have a window, right? Like we have artificial lights above us, right? We're not getting natural sunlight. And then in addition to that, we sit, right? And the fact is, are we getting in our exercise? ? Right? These are physical stressors. And the fact is, we are meant to get sunlight every single day, right? You know, hopefully multiple times per in the day, but we're meant to be in the sun. And a lot of us won't experience that in the day. And then in addition to that, artificial lights are not good for us. And so with that, like obviously just having that exposure all day, poor nutrition is another huge physical stress. And yes, some of us eat very, very healthy, right? And not to negate us, negate those people. But I mean, how many of us go get fast food or go grab something quick or fast in order to do it, or even skip lunch because of the fact that we don't have time, right? So we have this like poor nutrition as a whole. And then toxin exposure, right? And the fact is that we have more toxins in the environments than we ever have, whether that be our face products, you know, lotions, all that type of stuff, makeup, of course. But then in addition to that, our clothes, right? I mean, just everything is more toxic than it used to be, you know, even 5, 10, 15 years ago, let alone 30, 40 years ago when our our mothers and fathers grew up. Toxic exposure is a stressor on our body. So we have the physical and emotional stressors that are going on. But then in addition to that, we just have the chemical/society stressors that people don't think about that's going on within our bodies as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of stress on either aspect.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so I think as we're talking about this and just talking about all the different types of stress, it's so funny because I'm aware of all of these types of stress, but I think as we list them out kind of sequentially and talk about them, it's just really like pronounced. It's really pronounced. And, you know, when you were talking about some of the physical symptoms, right? One of the things that gets me about this midlife time is also the relationship changes that happen, because if our bodies are shifting and changing, and many times they're shifting and changing in ways during this phase of life that we don't enjoy, right? And so we don't feel, as women in midlife, we don't feel as at home in our bodies often. And so that has a profound impact on our relationships at home, right? So if our spouse or our partner, our relationship with them, and it doesn't have to do anything, it's not necessarily true that it has anything to do with them, right? It's not necessarily that they are rejecting what we look like through this phase. It is more so that we feel so terribly uncomfortable that we feel like, how can I don't want to show myself. I don't want, you know, like it's just very uncomfortable, right? And then that's another one. And so as you went through all of these different stressors, you know, it's so interesting because there are many of them that I think that people don't tend to think about, right? Like, I do think that they tend to think about the first couple maybe on your list, right? Like, I think you know, we can all pretty much agree and recognize that our children leaving home is stressful for us, right? And we can recognize that our parents aging and maybe needing more support is stressful. But then you add on top, like, the fact that we don't ever stop to think about the things that are actually happening in our bodies, and the fact that when our, you know, so for instance, when our liver has to work especially hard to process things, as you were saying earlier, that creates additional stress in our body, right? And all of our organ, like all of our body is doing, you know, similar things. So all of our organs are, you know, having similar functions. And so if they're working overtime, then it's going to create additional stress. So I really liked how you presented that. It's interesting. So I think we should pivot. I want to make sure that we talk about then, what do we do? What are some of the tools that we should have in our tool belt to help?
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I want to comment on from whatever is going on. Like, I feel like stress in particular, one of the common comments I get from patients is, unless you're like pulling your hair out stressed, you're not stressed, right? So one of the first things I recommend doing is start writing things down and start taking notes, right? As far as what's going on in my body, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, right? And like just starting to take note of it. It doesn't have to be a dramatic change. You don't have to be up every single night from 2 to 7 a.m. or something, you know, more extreme like that. You might just be waking up more frequently to use the restroom. That actually can be cortisol spiking. It doesn't mean you have to have that wired and tired brain fog, like, or not brain fog, but brain, you know, going 100 miles a minute or whatever in order for it to be a stress thing. You might just be waking up more frequently to urinate. That can be a small sign of stress, right? So, yes, the extreme of the like element going on does make a difference, but it can be a very minute or minimal thing that could still be a stressor in your life. What I recommend is by starting to take notes, right? If you're going to go see a practitioner or not, like, I mean, this can be helpful for the practitioner. But in addition to that, just you notating what's going on in your body, start jotting down anything you feel like a change. And I mean, it might be relevant, it might not. But the more information you have on yourself, whether, like I said, it be for a practitioner or not, the more ways that you can help yourself, right? So I recommend starting by, you know, just notating all the changes that you feel like are happening. And it doesn't matter how small they are, write them down. So with that, like making sure you're making a notes. And then with that, I mean, it might be stress related. It also might be something else, right? So also, like, you know, we're talking about stress today, but with that, that doesn't mean it might not actually be a hormonal imbalance or whatever combination of the above. So with that, you know, even if it's not stress, even if it's not one of the stress signs I spoke about earlier, still note it. Okay. The next thing I would do as far as, like, you know, talking with someone, if you were one of my patients, is talking about the idea of actually getting some stuff tested, right? Let's figure out, okay, now we have all this long list of notes of what's going on in your body. And with that, you know, we'll probably have a good idea about what's going on. But I typically like to do testing with people, right? And the fact is, we want to figure out if it is stress-based, if it is hormonal-based, is it thyroid-based, or whatever combination of the above, right? So I typically recommend testing of some sort, whether that be blood testing, saliva testing, urine testing. I recommend getting some sort of information utilizing testing. So with that, obviously, even if you start writing down your symptoms and then associate a number with it, that could be a way to document it as well, but I typically go with the testing route.
To get a baseline anyway, right?
Like, yes.
This is where you are now. And even if it's the first time that they see you, right? Like, okay, here's where you are now. And then that can serve as that baseline for the future.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah.
So with that, like doing some sort of testing. From there, we usually get test results and are better able to identify exactly what's going on. And then, of course, we would start with those bad information then, right? Because then at that point we have like, okay, this is what's going on. We would start doing treatments. But I'm going to talk about some basic things that we can be doing to help stress, assuming stress is what's going on, which for most people in this age of life, stress is a factor. Okay.
Yeah.
So with that, I recommend creating some sort of a mindfulness practice. that is something where it doesn't matter what the stress is, it is going to be helpful for you, right? And it doesn't have to be, oh my goodness, I need an hour, 7 days a week in order to be mindful, right? Like this can be fast, easy, like I'm going to take 5 minutes in the morning and hum, calm my body, et cetera, right? Whether this be prayer, whether this be a meditation, whether this be going outside and grounding, whether this be going and standing in sunlight, like, you know, just creating a mindfulness practice where we are connecting to like, or doing whatever we're going to do with that mindfulness, right? Calming our body, calming our system. And whether that be some sort of a yoga pose you could potentially do, whether that be humming. Humming actually stimulates the vagus nerve, which then creates a calm within our body. So with that, you could do something like that. You could be, you know, utilizing some incense or essential oils or something. I mean, there's so many simple things that you can do that can help create this mindfulness and calming within the body, which is what you ultimately want to do. Creating some sort of a practice. It can be short, it can be sweet, it can be a little bit longer, but just like even, and doing that even perhaps a few minutes throughout the day, right? Yes. Oh, I have a meeting. I'm going to take 3 minutes and calm my body before going into the meeting, right? Oh, I'm going to go use the restroom real quick just to calm my body, take some deep breaths, right? Or hum or, you know, whatever combination. It's easy. I mean, it's hard potentially to get in the rhythm of it, but it's an easy thing that we can do.
And that's one of the things that we've talked about on the podcast before is, you know, mindfulness doesn't have to take a long time. And in fact, I think sometimes it is best when we do it multiple times throughout the day to just kind of, even if it's tuning in, right? Just asking, how am I feeling right now? Where's my emotion right now? How's my body doing right now? Where's my head? Where are my thoughts?
Yep.
Are my thoughts really scattered? Is it hard for me to focus? Is this mindful minute, 1 minute? Is 60 seconds hard for me right now?
Yeah.
So I love that.
Absolutely. The next thing would be like experiencing nature in some way. Ideally, this involves sunlight just because that increases our vitamin D levels, which can help our hormonal production. And especially when we're going through either perimenopause, menopause, or whatever combination of hormonal change you're experiencing, vitamin D is very helpful for that. Going and being in nature can be so helpful. Whether that be walking barefoot, I'm sure everybody or maybe some of our listeners are familiar with like grounding elements and or, you know, barefoot walking, et cetera, going and, you know, walking on the ground or laying on the ground, you know, walking in nature of every sort, but like definitely getting outside can be very beneficial for our body as well and getting some sunlight in. Working and becoming conscious of your thoughts, as you had kind of already mentioned. And the fact is, you know, being aware of what our brain is doing, mainly because how many times I will fully admit I've done this, but it's like I've thought about something. And then next thing I know, the worst thing in the world is going to happen because, you know, my brain went down a weird rabbit hole and all of a sudden, you know, like bad things are going to happen, right? So with this, being very conscious of our thoughts and how those could be causing stress within our bodies, right? And the fact is, you know, putting out their good vibes into the world, right? Like all that type of stuff. And just being aware of how our brain is patterning and thinking. So like, those are some, you know, mental things that we can start implementing as well as some physical as far as the grounding in nature is concerned. The next thing I want to talk about a little bit is a diet aspect. One of the things that comes into my office a lot is people are stressed and they're intermittent fasting. Now, with that, is this the world's worst thing or like is it something I would never recommend? No. But is it something I recommend for people with stress? No. And the fact is that like, you know, people may or may not be experiencing some weight gain and they hear about their friend or their cousin or their dog who's been doing some intermittent fasting and they decide to try it. And it may or may not be working for them, right? From a stress standpoint and from a HPA axis dysfunction, which is a fancy word that basically means fight or flight. So when your body is in physical stress, it is not recommended that you do intermittent fast because of the fact is that as cortisol rises, insulin rises. And as that's happening, if we are not putting fuel in our body will go into a more frantic state and will sometimes or oftentimes then end up storing glucose as opposed to utilizing it.
Yeah.
So with that, we can often create a weight gain aspect by not fueling our body correctly when our body is under stress or duress. class.
Yeah. I just have to jump in here for a second because that, I remember this was, I wasn't intermittent fasting when I came to see you, but I was considering it because Casey was.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I think I could do this. And I will tell you that one of my biggest game changers, you had told me probably a while before I started doing it, you had said, I want you to eat something, even if it's little, within 30 minutes of waking up. And it took me a long time because I was not like, I was the I'm not hungry when I first wake up person, right? My game changer was starting to drink a smoothie every single morning because it's easy, right? I can make it fast.
Yep.
At this point, I've been making almost the identical recipe for years. And I do it every single morning. It is super easy. And as soon, not maybe not as soon, but as soon as my body kind of got used to that, I do think that that's when some of the weight that I had gained started coming off. And when I started realizing just how much there is to that, mm-hmm. right? To that, well, your body thinks that it's not going to be fed. And so it's holding on to the food that it, you know, the nutrition that it is being given. I had to, you know, jump on that one right quick because it surprised me, right? Like, I think that that's one of those things. It's such a fad. It's something that everybody hears about somebody doing and they think, oh, this could be my miracle solution. And it could be a solution. But it also could be hurting.
Correct.
And so without knowing the numbers, without having the data that you were talking about from the testing and somebody's assistance to kind of help you understand what is actually helping with it or happening within your body, you don't know if it's helping or hurting.
And without knowing data, I always go with the N equals one experiment. And the fact is, let's try it, right? So let's say, you know, you don't have a practitioner, you don't know, or you don't want to go see a practitioner, whatever combination of the above, right? Try it both ways. Let's try eating within 30 to 60 minutes of waking up and seeing how it works. Mm-hmm. And then let's try intermittent fasting and see how your body responds in both categories. I will say I do oftentimes get, and particularly women will make this comment to me, is the fact is when they start eating, well, as soon as I start eating, I get hungry, which is a natural response when your body wants food. I mean, that can be a very healthy response. And I also have a lot of women who will comment that once we start adding in protein and sufficient amount of protein, which is an aspect, I will go back and summarize all my dietary recommendations in just a moment. But with that, once we start adding in protein, all of a sudden, yes, they get hungry, but then they're also not as hungry throughout the day and they're not as hungry at night. And then all of a sudden, their body starts making more sense to them.
Yes. So you're satiated for longer, because that was another one of the things that you had me do as well, is up my protein intake. And especially because I was vegetarian at the time.
Yeah.
And so now I can't claim that because I eat fish way too often to be vegetarian. But yeah, the protein really does keep you satiated for a lot longer. And so then I feel like I can trust my hunger cues, because sometimes, you know, sometimes being thirsty feels like hunger.
Absolutely.
As well. And so, you know, it's like a lot easier for me to trust those hunger cues now that I have more protein coming into my diet.
Absolutely. And I mean, protein is definitely a huge function within that. Making sure you're eating consistently is another aspect. And for some people, we have ignored our hunger cues due to fear of whatever, whether that be weight gain, whether that be not trusting ourselves on an emotional level or whatever it is. When I usually start working with someone, like, these are the different things I'll recommend. And once again, these can vary a little bit, but waking up, eating within 30 to 60 minutes of waking, right? And the fact is, we want to make sure that we're getting our food into our system and making sure there's a protein source in there, right? So once again, whether that be a smoothie, whether that be bacon and eggs, whether that be whatever combination, there has to be a protein source. Mm-hmm. From there, making sure you're eating every 2 to 3 hours, maybe as much as 4 hours for certain individuals, but ideally around 2 to 3 hours thereafter. Once again, making sure there's a protein source within that, food. One of the hard things I have found with women in this particular age range of life, well, there's a couple factors. One, and this would actually be blanket across the board, I feel like people don't get enough protein into our diet. You know, working with Nutrition World, I've, you know, seen a whole bunch of a variety of people. And like consistently, if there is one macronutrient that people don't do or focus on or get enough on, unless you've like, you know, it's protein. Like I have people do, you know, dietary intake, you know, food intake logs and all that. And it's like, they're not getting nearly as much protein as they need to. We start increasing the amount of protein by whatever amount and people oftentimes will feel better. And for certain people, so oftentimes, how I recommend it is a percentage of goal body weight in grams of protein per day. And so with that, basically, it might be for some people, it might be 60%. And for other people, it might be, you know, 150%. It depends on the person. It depends on their goals and the categories and all the things. But with that across the board, I will find that people are, you know, deficient in protein. Also specifically with stress, with the adrenals, with how our adrenals utilizes protein and amino acids, focusing and emphasizing protein is a huge aspect. And another thing that women in this age range tend to do is not eat enough, right? I mean, I literally had a woman this morning come in for basal metabolic testing, which basically tests your basal metabolic rate, which is how many calories you're like burning sitting on your cute little patootie all day, right? And this particular individual had been, you know, eating around 1,000 to 1,200 calories. Turns out her basal metabolic rate is like 2,050. For a healthy weight loss range, she should be eating no less than 1,600. And most likely she'll end up needing to eat around 1,800 for weight loss. But I mean, she was, what, 400 calories less than what she should? It's a really common thing, unfortunately. And some of that is societal, right? In the dogma of society. But in addition to that, it's just what we hear from our neighbors or friends or cousins or dogs or whoever, you know, we listen to, and we're not eating enough. And then when we do eat, it's oftentimes not the right macronutrient ratio. And then you add the stress factor into it. And the fact is our body needs more aminos and protein during this time in life. And, you know, it's not a very good combination of things for sure. So
It totally isn't. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's interesting because I've had similar experience where I track my food in an app, not all the time, but sometimes. And what I find is that the days that I feel like I've eaten the most, where I'm like, oh, tomorrow morning, I'm not gonna enjoy seeing what I weigh in the morning. Often that's the morning that I actually have lost weight.
Yeah.
Which then tells me that I need to be eating higher on my range, yep. Right? And helps me understand how my body is processing. And yes, that could have to do with the nutrition that I'm putting in my body also. Sure. It's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation of eat more and lose more weight, but it tends towards that. And so I think that, you know, we're not eating enough. We're not giving our body enough nutrition. There's definitely something to that.
For sure. And another aspect that is important is sleep with our adrenals. And the fact is, and I know one of the signs and symptoms of adrenal issues is, of course, not being able to sleep well. So you'd be like, Maddie, I'm just not able to sleep. And you tell me to sleep. And now I'm stressed because I'm not sleeping. And you told me to. And it's important to sleep for my adrenals. I mean, there are some supplements that we could, you know, utilize that can help with sleep regulation. I mean, everyone's circadian rhythm can differ a little bit, obviously. But with that, most people's run about something along these lines. And the fact is, our body starts to physically repair between 10 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock a.m. And then we start to emotionally repair between 2 o'clock a.m. to 6 o'clock a.m. Now, that can vary. And of course, the amount of sleep a certain individual needs can vary. If we really want to be able to physically repair our adrenals, making sure that we are getting to bed at an earlier time is something that can be imperative. And once again, I mean, I can't tell you the number of people, oh, I'm going to sleep between 11 and 12. Well, depending on what time you actually fall asleep at, you're only getting a couple hours of physical repair then. And obviously that can be very detrimental to your health. And then of course, if you're waking up between 2 or 3, then obviously that just doesn't help the situation either. But point is, trying to get more sleep, whether it be adding in some supplements or some diet changes or different mindfulness practices to help sleep, but really getting in that element of sleep is really important for adrenal repair as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I know that sleep was a big one for me. I definitely had that waking, you know, and then the mind racing, yeah. Not being able to get back to sleep, right? When you wake up in the middle of the night, that's when you remember all the things that you forgot to do the day before, right? Or all the things you forgot to put on your to-do list, yep, for the next day.
For sure.
It's a very quote unquote convenient time to remember all of that.
All the things,
right? So what are some of the things that you recommend if someone is having that sleep trouble?
For sure. So, and of course, consult with a practitioner, you know, before starting any of these things. But some of my favorite herbs to go to for, or nutrients to go for to, and some of this can vary what exactly is going on in your brain or your body, I should say. Sorry, not just your brain. But with that, holy basil or tulsi is probably one of my favorite herbs on the planet. It's an adaptogenic herb that helps really calm the body. So it's a calmative herb, but there's tulsi tea, which is lovely that you can do before bed. There's obviously capsules or tinctures of it as well, but that is one of my favorite herbs to go to when people really need to have more rest or calm down. Holy basil is one of my go-to. Phosphatidylserine, which is so much fun to say. That is an amino acid. Serine is the amino acid that basically helps to keep cortisol lower. Right. So basically it says cortisol, can you just calm down? It stays in your system long enough that basically as that 2 to 3 hour, you know, AM hour appears, it will oftentimes keep the cortisol suppressed so that you hopefully don't wake or don't have the racing thoughts, et cetera. So phosphatidylserine is another one of those aspects that I would do on a regular basis for people who need help sleep. Magnesium threonate is another one that really helps to calm the brain. It's the only magnesium that crosses the blood-brain barrier to create that calming within the brain. You could take it before you go to sleep or when you wake up in the middle of the night if your brain just needs to turn off. So those are some of the ones that I really like for bedtime in particular to help calm. But throughout the day, your adrenals will work best when you're supporting them throughout the day. So your adrenal pattern, basically, it should ideally about 30 minutes after you wake up be the highest level it is the entire day. And once again, this is where some of the testing can be helpful. And the fact is, if you actually test and see if your adrenals are waking up correctly, because there are people whose wake up and they do not spike the way that they should. I have people who, once they start working or drinking their coffee, their cortisol is the highest after a nice cup of joe. Anyway, or like once again, it might spike at 3, or I have people that it's the highest at night. Point being is, obviously, how your cortisol is acting would change, of course, the recommendations, which is why you want to consult a practitioner with some of these things. Supporting your adrenals properly throughout the day is a huge help as far as making sure, like, your adrenals are functioning health, like, you know, throughout the entire day and at night as well. Some of the other supplements that can intertwine: lavender, valerian, rhodiola, passion flower, cordyceps, chamomile, ashwagandha, as I mentioned, holy basil. Gynostemma is another adaptogenic herb that, like, is on my, everyone should be on this supplement. Not really, but I love it. It is an adaptogenic herb that helps with longevity. So people who just have to go throughout the day, right? And the fact is they wake up, they, you know, go work out, they go to work, their children have practice or whatever, you know, combination, or they have a late meeting or whatever, and they're just on the go. Gynostemma is one of those herbs that helps with that. So that's a huge help. Anyway, so those are some of the herbs. Are there others? Absolutely. And I mentioned like the phosphatidylserine and magnesium threonate. I mean, there's a lot of good herbs and supplements that can definitely help with the adrenals, in addition to diet, lifestyle changes that, of course, can help people during this transitional point in life really help to control their stress levels.
Yeah, I think that's great because, you know, I mean, sleep is such an important factor because it's one of those things that you get into that sleep deficit.
Yeah.
And it builds, right? So the impact, one bad night's sleep is not a horrible thing, right? But over time, that impact can create a lot of stress in your body. It can create a lot, it just can create a lot of stress. And so I love those. So we've talked about a lot of things, right? So we've talked about the kind of stress that we experience in midlife. We've talked about a lot of those symptoms that you tend to see. Thankfully, we didn't stop there. And so we went into some of the things that our listeners can do. I guess if you were talking to somebody and they were just kind of like, well, I'm not really sure what I want to do. Are there like a top two or three things, or maybe we'll say three or four things that you would suggest to somebody who, after speaking with them, you know that there's stress in their life. You don't know to what extent because no testing has been done, but you know that there's stress. Are there like a few things that somebody could start doing to just kind of have a little bit of an impact as they're really assessing and figuring out, where do I go from here with all of this great information? Where do I start? How do I do this? And I know you went through some of that, but I want to kind of narrow it down to like a top few things that will help set them up for success as they continue on the path of exploring how the stress is impacting their lives.
Yeah. So I would go back to starting to note what is going on, right? Like, yeah. I mean, that information can be so valuable, whether you end up working with a practitioner or just your own reflection. And the fact is, I mean, that's just imperative. I can't tell you the number of people who come in who just don't understand fully what's going on in their body, which, like, once again, no issues around that, like no shame around that by any means. But as far as a starting point, it can be so helpful for a practitioner as well as just your own body. Like, what has changed, right? So that would definitely be something that I would say, like, start taking notes. The other things that tend to make a huge impact: sleep changes, like making sure you're getting adequate sleep, really, really is huge in so many ways. Doing some basic diet changes really, really does make a huge impact, even if you're not hitting your quote unquote goals every single time, but just looking at making that adjustment can be so huge. Some other simple supplements that if you think you might have stress that could be easy to add in: electrolytes. There was a poll that was done on like a whole bunch of like, you know, whether it be naturopathic doctors, doctor of natural medicine, MDs, like NPs, I mean, whatever it was. And basically it was like, out of all the supplements you recommend, what are the supplements that make the biggest difference in your practice that you just are like, you guys should take, right? And overall, there were two that like topped the list. One of them was digestive enzymes, whether that be like betaine or hydrochloride or a full spectrum digestive enzyme, which is not relevant necessarily to this conversation. The other one was like an electrolyte or a mineral aspect. And so when we're looking at adrenals, once again, adrenals sit on top of the kidneys. And so we as a society really don't get in proper electrolytes. And that tends to affect the stress levels and affect the kidneys and all that a little bit more. So drinking enough water and making sure some of that water on a daily basis has electrolytes in it. And I always recommend a wide spectrum electrolyte, but that's something that can be really helpful. Two other potential supplements that are really benign that help most people in this stage of life and whether they have some level of stress: vitamin C is very important for the adrenals, and a B complex. So if there's like some little things that people can start doing, tracking your data, drinking enough water, getting in some electrolytes, B complex, vitamin C, and then potentially sleep and getting, you know, adequate nutrients in.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's good, right? I think it's really important for everyone to walk away having a few things that they could try. And I definitely think noting what's happening. We talk a lot about journaling here. For me, this is kind of part of how I explore how I'm feeling is even through my journal. I actually do bring my journal if I come to see you, but I also summarize, right? Like, because if you're journaling, it might be all over the place, right? You don't know what's going to come out, but you know, then going back and kind of using that as a source of your data to summarize, oh, okay, so here, I didn't sleep well. Here, you know, I had this day where I couldn't eat. You know, I was super busy and I couldn't eat. And I've got this going on at work that's really stressful. I have this going on at home that's, you know, just all of these different factors, having a place where you're writing it down so that, because our mind is fickle sometimes. Like, we don't want to remember these things. Mm-hmm. They're not the positive things that we want to remember. And so putting them on paper kind of helps us have recall. And so I love that. Thank you so much for being here.
Most welcome. Thank you for having me here and allowing me to have this discussion with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So if any of our listeners want to find you, and I will include all of your links in show notes, but if they want to find you, how do they find you?
Well, through my website would probably be one of the best ways, www.lifehealthhappiness.com. And from there, there's a contact information. Of course, there's our phone number and all the things. So you can reach out to us through the website.
Nice. And I know you see people, obviously, in person. Do you see people remotely?
Virtually. Absolutely. So with that, we can do telemed, we can do phone calls if you don't want to put on makeup that day. So point being is I do see people across the country. I have patients in California and I have some in Virginia or whatever it is. So I can see people across the country.
Great. Perfect. All right. Well, we will include all of your details in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here today with me. This was a great conversation and I hope it was really informational.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me again.